Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you've just joined us, welcome to Radio Islam International and welcome to the program Family Health Matters. I'm your host, Sister Zeenat. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Well, it's about 14 minutes past 2, alhamdulillah. And joining me this afternoon in our studios is the Linasia Clinic's community-based rehabilitation services team. We have with us the occupational therapist, Sister Melanie Miller. We also have the audiologist and speech therapist, Sister Raisa Mullah, and our physiotherapist, Brother Mohammed Abu Bakaris, also with us at Radio Islam Studios, alhamdulillah. Now, this afternoon, our discussion is based on preparing your child for school. We'll be looking at it from, the three different perspectives. Inshallah, all three the therapists are sitting here. And we're going to be looking at how these therapists or how these therapies are actually able to improve your child's readiness for school, inshallah. Okay, a reminder to our listeners that our lines will be open throughout the program. If you have any questions or concerns, please do feel free to contact us. The number to dial is 011-854-1548. You can also SMS or WhatsApp us on the number 082-84-92-786, inshallah. Right, so assalamu alaikum, good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us.
JazakAllah for having us.
Thank you so much. Brother Abu Bakr Riz, can you hear us?
Yes, shukran. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. JazakAllah khair for joining us this afternoon. Right, now, let's start off, and I think we'll start off with our speech therapist today, alhamdulillah. From a speech therapist perspective, what are the skills that a child needs before they even start school?
Okay, so today's topic is mainly based on the speech therapy perspective, but I'll try and bring in a little bit of audio as well. So, as you know, starting school is quite exciting and it's a monumental thing in a child's life. As parents, caregivers, grandparents, we all want to make sure that our children enjoy the experience of education. It's also important to note that while all kids do develop at different rates, there are certain skills that the child would need to be able to cope nicely in school. So I'm sure that parents are aware of specific skills that the child would need. Obviously, these things are targeted at a lower level in the grade R, in the nursery, such as using a scissor, being able to write their own names. When we look at it from a speech perspective, we're looking at their broader range of things. So it's not just academic. It's a lot of different things. So something like language development. This is the child having a good base of language. So they understand language, they know how to use language, and they possess a good vocabulary. That's very, very essential because they have to be able to follow instructions that are given to them by teachers, carry out instructions given to them. Relay information that's told to them in school, then going home and telling parents about it. Having a good vocabulary is very important because if you think about kids when they're in school, they do a lot of different themes, a lot of different topics are touched on, and they need to have an understanding of that there. So that's quite important for them. What's very, very important, what I will speak about a little later, is prior exposure to books. So even before a child is able to read, we advocate for pre-literacy. So this is making the children aware of literacy skills even before they start being able to read. Your social maturity. The child makes friends easily and is able to cooperate with others. He or she is able to do basic skills such as toileting and dressing. I'm sure Mel will cover that a bit. Then also behavior and discipline and the desire to learn. So the child is quite curious to learn. So these are just a few things that we'd work on. So what skills we'd look out for before the child goes to school.
Okay, now, what I find a bit of a concern these days is with regards to language development. Sure. You mentioned language development. Sure. As something that, is something that you need to look at.
Sure.
But many a times, and especially in our country now, we have people coming in from different parts of the country, and then all obviously some of them can only speak a specific language. English obviously is the main language, but then you get a child that can only speak a specific language. How does this, you know, influence the child?
Okay, so what we usually advocate for is that research has been done to show that if a child has a good base in their home language, it's usually a lot easier for them to learn a second language. So if you think about, like you said, a lot of our kids come from place internationally and local. We have nine languages in South Africa. So what I usually tell my parents is teach the child, do early literacy, do whatever you have to in your home language. There's no you don't have to force them onto the English. But obviously we are in South Africa, and mainstream schooling is mainly in English. So sometimes you see that transition becomes a little bit difficult for those kind of kids. So I usually tell the parents is make sure they have a good base in their home language. Then, if that's okay, what you do is whatever you're carrying out in the home language, carry it out in English. So if you give them an instruction, tell them in their home language the instruction, follow it through with the English instruction, even vocabulary. Say it in the home language, bring in the English after that. Okay, it helps them transition. It also allows them to learn, because if there is a breakdown in that language ability and language the learning of the language, they're going to struggle a lot at school. They're not going to be able to cope with kids that are in there, so they won't be able to be on par with kids in their class. They'll be falling behind because not because they don't know it, the language is an issue. It's just they don't have that understanding of English, and that becomes an issue. It becomes quite a difficulty for a lot of parents.
Yeah, I that was something that I thought about, you know, when I was thinking about children actually going to school and either knowing only Gujarati or maybe just an African language, and then having to do going into school, and now suddenly you're sitting with a teacher teaching you in English. What do you do then? And there are parents that insist, and I feel it's also very good that you do know your home language. That is very important for all of us.
It forms a good foundation and a good base for you. So if your home language is strong, it will be easier for you to learn a second language, because of that foundation is filled. There's no gaps. If there's gaps, there's going to be problems between those gaps.
Okay, so as a speech therapist, how can you help, you know, in the role of the, what is the role of the speech therapist really?
Okay, so a speech therapist would focus mainly on the communication skills. So looking at if a child can initiate and sustain conversations with adults, being their teachers or other children. So speaking clearly, having eye contact, formulating sentences that make sense, so they have grammatically correct sentences. We'll also ensure children have language skills to describe recent experiences and ask inferential questions such as why and what's next. So that would be like if a child goes home, they obviously want to retell their parents, this is what I did in school today. It follows a sequence because they're going to start from the time I got to school, we did this first, we did that, so they follow a sequence. They need to have good understanding of language to be able to express the language. So that's how it come in. So we'd help quite a bit. So understanding and requesting instructions, seeking clarification if the child's not sure, carrying out directions in a sequence, listening attentively and answering questions in a group situation. This is very important because if you think about our government schools, it's not 20 kids in a class. It's about 40 kids in a class. So they have to be able to listen attentively, interact with the teacher, answer questions. So that's quite important. Talk reciprocally with peers and take part in conversation. Join in conversations. Recite rhymes and sing songs. Retell stories. And sort and match items according to simple attributes. So we also look at social skills. So such as turn-taking. Turn-taking can be doing while they're doing an activity or while they're having a conversation with the teacher or with another child. So social skills are also quite important, even eye contact. But when you look at eye contact, you also have to be culturally specific. Certain cultures have their own traditions where younger kids are not meant to be looking at adults straight in the eye. So when I see a child, it might not be something the child is doing, because traditionally or culturally it's just not something that happens within that context. So you have to be quite careful with
social kind of things when you're looking at it.
But eye contact plays a very important role.
It does.
Now, what if, you know, it has nothing to do with your social whatever it is, but the thing is, what if a child just doesn't have eye contact? When you talk to them and they don't really look at you and, you know, they don't really respond to you, would that be something, you know, that you should be worried about?
So when you're looking at eye contact, usually our kids with autism, they don't have social skills. So autistic kids, they don't really understand when someone's talking to you, you need to look at them in the face. They don't have that social, they don't really enjoy children around them. They like to be on their own. So it might be related to autism, or it might not be. It might be cultural, or it might just be the child's attention. Some kids just don't look at you when you talk to them. So what I tell parents is, promote that eye contact. Ensure that you are sitting at the level of the child. So if you're talking to them, get down to their level. Not you standing and they sitting on the ground and you looking down on them. Get onto their level. Ensure that you ask them, okay, we're going to talk now. Can you look at me? And then you have a conversation like that. So you bring their attention. You call their name so that they are engaging with you in terms of eye contact. It also allows them to see facial expression, body language. If they're not looking at the child, if they're not looking at the parent, they're not understanding, oh, but they're upset. I can see how upset they are on their face. I can see the body language is changing. So eye contact is not just for interaction. It allows you to read a lot of different things when you're looking at someone.
Okay, so where do parents, caregivers and grandparents start preparing, or, you know, when do they start preparing their children to be ready for school? You know, we're doing this program today. It's almost a good few months, more than about 6 months before, you know, the year actually starts, the new year actually starts. So tell me, is this actually a good idea for us, doing the program now?
Yeah, Abu Bakr and I were just speaking about kids are actually now, their parents are starting the process of getting them to school. So we thought this would be quite an appropriate topic to actually inform the listeners of what you can do from now till then. 6 months is it's a good amount of time to start something slowly. So basically it's critical to help young children. So what I would advocate for is start as early as you can. I mentioned before about your pre-literacy skills. That is very important because children that have not had experience with books or writing often have difficulty with understanding. It takes them a bit longer to understand when they go to school. So even if it's a baby or a small child, expose them to books. It doesn't have to be, obviously you're going to pick books that are appropriate to the age. You're not going to take a book that only has words for a two-year-old. You have to have books that have maybe one word and a lot of pictures so that they can see there's a text associated to a story. It also helps with sequencing. So I promote reading. Get your children involved in reading. Read to them storybooks. Have books so that they know, I open a book like this. I turn the pages. There's a sequence to my story. Oh, this is the start of the story. There's something happening in the story. Oh, this is how the story concluded. So the book works on everything. So I promote book reading quite a bit.
And I think this is where grandparents and caregivers really can play a very important role, you know.
Yes.
And children love you to sit down and read stories for them, even if they're very little.
Yes.
Very little ones, even babies for that matter. You can actually start reading
for them. It keeps them, you feel quite engaged with the child because you can sit with them, enjoy the book together, you're reading. It makes it a fun bonding time also for parents because parents are working, so you don't really get... Some parents are working quite a bit, so to get actual time alone with their children is sometimes difficult, just to sit down. But if you have a book, 5-10 minutes of your time, you're sitting with your child, and you're engaging, you're reading a book, they're learning, and they're bonding with you at the same time. So it's quite a lot of benefits to book reading.
Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, you know, these days, even little babies, instead of sitting with a book, would be sitting with that phone.
And the tablet. And
yes, and I think that's such a, you know, it's such a good idea to start getting your children interested in reading again. And I think this is where you can start. From a very, very young age.
Sure.
Just to get them out of that habit, because it's a, you know, if you just see a little, even a baby sitting with their telephone, you know, phone in their hand, and actually knowing how it works. I just look at them and I think, oh my goodness, this is, I don't know. But it's a good idea, like you said, to start getting your children more into that habit of reading, inshallah. We're going to talk about different kinds of books, but before we do that, let's take a quick break, and inshallah when we return, we will continue with our program. A reminder to our listeners, if perhaps you have any questions or concerns, please do feel free to contact us. The number to dial 011-854-1548. We have at least the Linasia Clinics Community-Based Rehabilitation Services team with us in the studio. It's the occupational therapist, the audiologist and speech therapist, and of course we also have our physiotherapist with us. So if you have any questions, please do feel free to contact us. Stay tuned, we'll be back in a few moments. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to our program, that's the Family Health Program, and with me in the studio today is the Linasia Clinics Community-Based Rehabilitation Services team. We do a monthly program for our listeners. We have our occupational therapist with us. Today we have Melanie Miller with us. Normally it's Sister Nazreen Hassan, but Melanie's standing in for her today. Audiologist and speech therapist, Sister Raisa Mullah, and physiotherapist, Brother Mohammed Abu Bakaris, also with us in the studios upstairs. Okay, we continue talking about our children and reading and how important it is for us to, you know, start getting them into the habit of reading. But let's look at some of the types of books that can, you know, that parents can actually start using to promote early literacy, and also some of the ways to share books with babies and toddlers.
Okay, so I'm just going to quickly break it down in terms of ages so that parents and grandparents have an idea of what they can use for their kids. So from 0 to 6 months, we're looking at books with simple large pictures and the color, bright colors. Usually those soft books that kids bite on, those are quite nice because they are still, they're exploring, they're taking things to their mouth. So that's quite nice. Instead of getting them a paper book where they're going to bite and then it's going to be finished.
I had a book the other day and my little granddaughter was actually bit the corner and I was looking at it, a new book that I just got. So it's important to know that to get things like that.
Then for 6 to 12 months, you'd get books with familiar objects like balls, bottles, so like alphabet books are quite nice. For your young toddler, so from 12 to 24 months, you're getting sturdy books, so things that they can actually carry, books with photos of children doing familiar things like sleeping or playing, books about saying hello or goodbye. So this is where you'd only have a few words on each page, and then books with simple rhymes or predictable text are quite nice. For your older kids, books that tell simple stories, so these could be your sequence stories, so something that has a start, a middle and an end, your bedtime story books, books about counting, alphabet shapes and sizes, animal books, vehicle books, so whatever you can think of, theme books. Theme books are quite nice, just so that they have an understanding of, okay, this is my book, this is that opens, I closes. You'd expect this a little bit more when they grow up. When they're small, you're not expecting them to be able to turn it, but as they grow up, you'd start seeing, okay, they're interacting a lot more, turning pages, opening the book, sometimes they'll even hold it upside down. It's okay. It's fine. Just it's, as long as they're interacting, they're holding onto a book. They know how it's supposed to be held, how the pages are supposed to be turned. So children can have fun. So books are quite fun. It's important. It's an important thing for them to learn. It's also a few minutes is okay. Don't worry if you don't finish the story. Young children can only sit for a few minutes and then the attention is gone. They can't concentrate, so I wouldn't expect a one-year-old to be sitting down for 15 minutes.
And also sometimes when you're reading a story, obviously they do get a bit bored.
They do.
Can't just listen to the whole story, so
it's okay.
It's okay to
have that happening. Let them turn the pages. So a three-year-old can do it on their own, but you're not going to expect a six-month-old baby to do that, okay? So you have to be age-appropriate when you're doing these things. Make it personal. So if they're not interested in the story that's happening there, create another story using those same pictures. So if there's a picture in the book and they're not interested, maybe it's a book they know about, as a parent, grandparent, become imaginative. Create your own story. Make your own stories if you want. I mean, our grandparents have told us stories for years, stories that have passed down. Carry on doing those things. It's important. Mm-hmm. It's quite important.
Yeah, so basically, it's very, very important. But, you know, just one thing that I want to ask you before we continue is with regards to the library. Yeah. How important is it for us as parents? You know, I don't think people, I don't know if I don't know much about it, or am I just a little not familiar with it because I don't have little, you know, I don't really have to go there myself to take the children.
Yeah.
But do children still love going to the library?
I'm not sure about that, to be completely honest. I know a lot of the kids are always on the phones, and now you can even download books. But I'd actually promote the library. It also, the kids have to have their own library card. They have to go get their own book, return the book within a specified amount of time. So it even teaches discipline. So I'd promote the library. I don't know how many people are still going to the library, but I would advocate for it.
Yes, it was fun times those days.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when it also will, you know, encourages a child to read, to make sure that I have to complete that book because I have to go and give it back.
Yeah.
On a certain time, maybe in a week's time, I have to go and change it.
Yeah.
Or by the end of the week, we have to go and change books, and we can get more books. Instead of having to buy books, books are expensive
these
days.
They are expensive.
You know, they're quite expensive.
Yeah.
And if you do have books, obviously, you want to take care of them.
See,
and
even if you have, like, family members that have books, ask them to keep them for your grandchildren so that books are passed down. So everyone's not spending a few rand on the same book, but everyone's using a book that's been passed down. So preserve your books. Keep those books nicely so that other people can use them. Even if you donate them to someone, like orphanages or to schools, schools always accept donations of books. So you can even do that.
Yeah, I'm sure even libraries would take books.
They do.
If you do have, because, I mean, books is something that you really need. In any case, let's get back to Melanie. Melanie, as an occupational therapist, has come in. You know, what I want to know is, what can parents actually do to ensure that their children are prepared to start school? As an occupational therapist, your perspective, please.
So, children are natural leaders, and, you know, they like to play. And I'm sure all parents and adults have seen how children just absorb new information. They just take everything in. But like most adults, children enjoy activities that they like and that they are good at. No one likes doing something that you're not good at. So sometimes this means that children don't develop the necessary skills in one or more of their developmental areas. So, for example, your child might like to play outside with the ball, but they don't like sitting at a table and drawing. And that could have a negative impact on, just an example, you know, their fine motor skills and their ability to write when they have to go to school. So children need direction when they play. They need encouragement and they need reward for participating in things that they don't like. So at home, it's important for parents to try and make sure that their children participate in all kinds of activities. So there should be a balance in what the child does. They should play outside. They should, like Raisa, we were speaking now, reading books, drawing, coloring. There should be a balance, and they should engage in a variety of activities at home. Also, parents can find out what the children are learning at school, you know, at the nursery or the preschool, and what they should be able to do for their age, and then focus specifically on developing these things. Also, encouraging your child and praising them when they complete something that's difficult. And it's very, very important for parents to make sure that children develop independence, because they need to be independent when they go to school. Like Raisa also said, very important for them to be able to follow instructions. And then make sure that they have responsibilities to complete within the family. So making their own bed or doing the dishes or whatever you can think of that your child can help you with in the household, because that also teaches responsibility and independence. And then I just want to add, I think sometimes it's difficult for parents to know how the child is performing if they are in a nursery or in a preschool. It's difficult for parents to know if the child is sitting still, if they are listening, if they are following the rules. So it's important for parents to also talk with the teachers at the child's preschool and ask the teacher if they have any concerns regarding the child's readiness to go to school, to primary school.
Mm. Yeah, I think this is very important. And you just spoke about discussing your child's school readiness with their teacher. Is it important for a child to attend a preschool in order to prepare them adequately for grade one? Because these days, you know, there's nursery school, yes. There's preschool, there's grade R, yes. And most parents would think, is it necessary for all of this?
Yes. So as therapists, we usually recommend for children to start attending a creche or a preschool from a very young age. A preschool just allows for certain skills to develop that the child might not necessarily develop within the home environment. So I'm just going to give you some examples. One example is social skills, like Raisa was just mentioning, and interacting with children their own age, which is very, very important for going to school. Also, they develop independence when they go to school. They learn to ask for help from a teacher because mommy is not always around to help, you know, when they're struggling with something. They learn to cope without having their parents in their immediate environment. And then the teachers at the preschools, they normally also have a good understanding of the skills that need to be developed at each age, and they know how to stimulate children in the correct way. So placing your child in a preschool, it could make the transition of going to school much easier and less stressful for you and your child. But I just want to add, it is possible for a child to develop normally and to be ready for school without attending preschool. It is most definitely, it is possible, but then in this case, the parent that stays at home with the child during the day will have to monitor the child's development and school readiness. So just do a little bit of your own research and just to ensure that the child is stimulated correctly when the child is not attending a preschool.
I think it's very important for that. And the thing is, if the child is at the school, even a play school for that matter, if there's any little problems, I think sometimes as parents we overlook these things, maybe yes. Because you have so many other siblings around you, having to take care of so many other things, or you may not be at home, you may be at work most of the time, but being in a school or a preschool for that matter, it would be easier for them to pick up problems,
yes,
that may come up. And
yes.
And I think the most important thing is to pick it up quickly and to be able to, get the proper help that the child needs and be able to then take it on from there. And it can make a very big
yes,
difference.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, how would a parent know if their child is ready to go to school? And, what kind of things can a parent actually look out for?
Okay, so from an occupational therapy perspective, I'm just going to name a few things that parents can look out for. It is important for these skills to be developed before the child starts with school. So the child should be eating a range of foods, and they should be able to open their lunchbox and their wrappers, and they should at least be using utensils to eat food. They should be able to brush their own teeth and their own hair, so they should have some independence in their own routine. They should be going to the toilet independently, and they shouldn't be having accidents anymore. They should be able to follow and cope with a routine. They should also be able to look after their belongings, so their school bag, their lunchbox, and the items of clothing. And they should be able to find objects within a familiar environment. So, for example, finding a cup from the kitchen or a book from the reading corner. And it's important that your child is able to put away toys after playing with these toys. It's also important that the child should be able to sit for an appropriate length of time. So between the ages of 6 and 7, we expect a concentration span of 40 to 45 minutes, which is quite long.
I don't think so. I think children cannot sit.
Yeah. So you need to just make sure that your child can sit for, just a length of time to be able to engage in tabletop activities. Also, they should be able to follow simple instructions from an adult. And they should be able to cope with some changes in their routine. And it's very important for the child to be able to ask for help when they are struggling with something. They should know how to ask for help. So these skills are important for the children to cope and to flourish within their school environment. And ideally, we want these skills to be developed in the year before they start school. So,
there's quite a bit of things, but some of them may obviously you know, be okay. They'll be able to handle all of this. But some of them are not. And when these little things do come up, and I think one of them is, you know, sitting for that long, that amount of time, I think sometimes that's one of the biggest problems many of the teachers have these days. Anyway, can you just tell us more, a little more about the role that occupational therapy plays in getting children ready for school? How can you help them as an occupational therapist?
So occupational therapists are concerned with specific things. These things are fine motor skills, cognitive skills, so thinking abilities, perceptual skills, organizational skills, independence, and coordination. And so if you bring your child to an occupational therapist, the things that the occupational therapist will look at will include using a pencil with the correct grip, writing their own name, cutting with scissors, copying shapes, knowing colors, knowing letters, you know, counting, all the basic things that they learn in the preschool, solving just simple problems like building a puzzle, dressing and undressing, independence in toileting like I've mentioned, following instructions, playing with their friends, taking turns, and then the occupational therapist will basically look at the child's ability to manage the school environment independently.
And when will it actually become necessary for a child to be seen by an occupational therapist?
Okay, so it is important to realize that an occupational therapist is not only necessary when it comes to school readiness. Your child can be seen by an occupational therapist from as young as birth if there are any concerns regarding their development. Mm. But if your child is going to school within the next 2 years, they should be developing these skills that we have just discussed. So you should start to see these skills develop now. If any of these skills are missed or incompletely developed, the child may struggle with the demands or the pace of learning at school. So it's important to keep an eye out for these skills to develop. I would always recommend an occupational therapy assessment whenever you are concerned about your child's development, and then the occupational therapist will be able to discuss the severity of the delay with you, and the occupational therapist will also be able to assist you in getting these skills developed in time for school.
Okay. Thank you so much for sharing all that with us, and I'm sure our listeners out there will certainly benefit from this. But we're going to take a very short break. When we return, we'll be speaking to Brother Mohammed Abu Bakaris as the physiotherapist, and we'll be listening to his perspective, inshallah. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few moments. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to the program, Family Health Matters. I'm your host, Sister Zenit, and with me in the studio now is our physiotherapist, Brother Mohammed Abu Bakaris. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Abu Bakar. We didn't forget about you.
Wa alaikum salam, no problem.
Okay. Listen now, as a physiotherapist, what do you say are important factors related to a child being, you know, school ready?
Right. Well, looking at factors, well, you're going to have factors starting off very early. There are certain factors that would come into play later on in life. Some things we can deal with, some things we would have to try and manage accordingly, starting from birth itself. A full-term child generally would reach his or her milestones within the specified age range, and these that is something that, for example, would have to be managed. But ensuring that the child is in a good family environment, talking about healthy food, healthy living, as well as general, as the ages, as the years go on, if you look at respiratory function, is the child often getting colds and flus? That's going to may affect activity, speech, as well as hearing. You know, as touched on previously, the ability to hear also is going to affect the child's ability to develop his oral communication, eye contact, as well as the child's ability to engage with others, which is going to stem from both hearing and visual. The child's willingness to play. Obviously, this comes from family environment. How is the family structure at home? Is communication done in a healthy manner within the home? All of these are factors that will naturally overflow onto the child's own development and therefore school readiness for at the specified age.
Okay. Another thing that I think is you mentioned earlier was the mentioned developmental milestones. Now, what milestones or rather achievements do we expect a child going to grade one to have reached?
Well, okay, when we look at milestones, naturally people are very familiar with milestones at younger ages, to say at within this age range we would want the child to be talking or sitting or standing and walking and so on. So similarly, we would have these milestones throughout. And for a child going to grade one, what we'd be looking for is when we look at the gross motor functions, we're looking, can the child do bigger movements with accuracy, such as throwing, catching, kicking, hitting a ball, running, jumping. Naturally, there will be misjudgments in the child's own physical ability, but the child still being able to enjoy games and engage with these more, if you can refer to it at the age as a high performance, as in while running, are they able to quickly come to a halt? Are they able to change directions? Riding a bicycle? Are they able to participate in sports, whether it be soccer, martial arts, and then with that, the ability to enjoy both ground activities, rolling, moving on the floor, but as well being aware, not unnecessarily or constantly bumping into objects that we do see with the younger ones. But in grade one, we would want, or with children going into grade one, we would want them to overcome this and have better performance, jumping skills, not always falling, being able to skip rope. These are things that we would expect a child going into grade one to be able to do.
And of course, if some of these milestones are not reached yet at that age, then certainly there's going to be some problems, and obviously they need to then, or maybe like they said, you know, it will be picked up even earlier if they have attended maybe a nursery schools or preschools or, yes, you know, whatever that is.
It's naturally, and I mean, with that, there's nothing wrong per se with holding a child back. We're talking about school readiness. Each individual is exactly that. If he or she is an individual, so he or she will be different from another person. If that person is school ready, alhamdulillah, then they are school ready. If they are not school ready, then we should have that. We should allow for the delay with admission into the schooling, because that problem is not just going to resolve on its own. We need to take time to look at that, just like with a child that starts to stand later than what we would normally expect. We then work on standing to allow the child to achieve the ability of standing, and then naturally that walking would be delayed. But if we address it quick enough and we're able to resolve or speed up that milestones, if we can so to speak, then naturally we have the possibility of achieving running at the correct age, within the correct age range. But if we do not address it, then obviously the delay will be continuous, and then you would have the child naturally having a delay later on. In other words, if they fail grade 3, they're held back in any case, and then that affects the child's confidence, and it has a variety of overflow within the child's life. So when we look at school readiness, we look at that individual. We have certain norms, and we want the child to achieve that, so that they can naturally achieve in the school space.
Yeah, I think you brought up a very important point where you actually need to keep your child back. You know, just hold them back, maybe for a year sometimes, if they actually cannot cope, if they are really not necessary. And I think sometimes as parents, we fail to understand that important point, you know, is holding your child back just a year. And we insist on the child need to start school at that time. But we don't realize how we, you know, how much of damage we actually can do for the child by insisting the child start school when they are not really ready. Okay. How can one actually encourage this kind of development that you're talking about?
All right. Well, I mean, if I can take from the example of the library, it's a communal, it would have to be a communal activity where the mother or the father, whoever the caregiver is going with the child. And yes, we do have a decrease in turnout with regards to children going to the library, but those kind of activities develop not only you can talk about the book being something for the child to read, yes. But then you get the idea of responsibility ingrained in the child, where you're taking care of somebody else's book. You understand that this is yours for the time being. You're taking care of that. You understand there's a time frame. You need to return it, and you need to be responsible. You have a library card. That is what allows you access. It's almost like a transaction that the child must then understand. And this naturally will develop the child. But with all of these things, the responsibility will fall on the caregiver's shoulders. And then we look at other things, playing outside. So yes, the first priority of a parent would be safety. Is the child playing in a safe area? Does the child know? Does the child understand something basic from the importance of maybe protective equipment when they're talking about riding the bicycle? But riding a bicycle is only one thing. Do they understand the rules around them? So whether it be rules of the road or rules of the game, also this is part of their development, and it's important for the parents to impress this upon them. And then obviously you're going to have falls and so on. So again, making sure that the caregivers and the children understand if an accident were to occur, how it is that we're going to go about handling this. But all in all, when we're looking at the child's body-eye coordination, so this is kicking, hitting, catching, throwing, we'd want this to be developed. But in anything in life, a student wants to learn, he goes to a teacher. Somebody who wants to learn how to swim, they go to somebody who knows how to swim. Similarly, the child needs to learn from a skillful player. So the parents, this is where the parents is going to come in, to get the child to be active and to develop more quicker as naturally they have the skill. The only thing would be the aims would be slightly different, where with an adult we can talk about accuracy. With a child, we at the grade one, or going into grade one, we're more looking at distance as opposed to accuracy. Sorry, I just got cut off there for a moment. The responsibility comes from both sides. I think something's happening.
Well, actually, it's almost time for the news, and we need to end our program. But JazakAllah khair, brother Muhammad Abu Bakaris, we certainly do appreciate all the information that all three of you shared with us today. And I'm sure it will make a huge difference for our listeners out there, especially if they have little ones. This is the time to start, getting your children ready for school, because if they are starting next year, make sure we've shared with you a lot of information. And if you want more information, obviously you can contact the rehab team at the Lanesha Clinic. I'll just share that number with you. It's 078-9065-308. You can call them. If they're available, they will talk to you immediately. And if they're not, then you can SMS them, and they will as soon as they have the time, get back to you again, inshallah. So that number again, 078-906-5308. But once again, JazakAllah khair to the three of you. I certainly do appreciate you coming into these programs with us, and it's only for the benefit of our listeners. JazakAllah khair to all three of you. Well, that's it then from us. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.